So you say science and reason. To what degree, you know, should we try to even value these? You know, is valuing junior mining stocks a good idea? Trying to
put dollar valuations on them.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, it's generally a meaningless exercise.
Yeah.
They have the dollar valuations. They have the market capitalizations that the market assigns to them at any given time. So you can't say. I say, oh, this stock is undervalued. Mm-hmm. Well, it's undervalued in comparison to what? Generally, its peers and the valuation its peers had at any particular point in time.
Yep.
Stock XYZ, symbol XYZ, may have a market cap 4 or 5 times greater now than it did a year ago at the bottom of the market.
Yeah.
Is it more valuable? Well, it, in terms of dollars, yes it is, because its peer group, it's been carried along with its peer group.
Yep.
So what you're trying to do in the market, you're trying to find stocks that are undervalued with respect to their peers.
Yep.
At any given time.
Yep.
And that's about all you can do, because very few of these junior companies produce any cash flow.
Yeah.
They're not really designed to produce cash flow. Yeah. Until they are long-lived companies and have graduated from junior exploration space into smaller mid-cap miner space. Then the analysts and the brokers and the market can put better valuations in terms of net cash flow, dividend producing ability. For the most part, and even then you're comparing them to their peers.
Yep. So. And you know, the academics and the theory goes that we have ways to come up with nice little prices or values for some of these cash flowing assets and things like this, but you know, the reality is somewhat more complicated.
Well, yeah, and you're basing those valuations on projection of metal prices and projection of input costs. The price of oil affects that. Tell me what price of oil is going to be next year.
Yeah.
Well, I can give you some ideas of what I think it's going to be, but let's go back and look when oil was $26 a barrel a year ago, or probably went up by 3 or 4 days after it hit bottom on January 20th. The exact year, it was probably in the low 30s or something,
upper
20s. But when oil was, well, it was easy to pick the bottom in oil last January, although it tested that exact low and actually went a little bit lower on February 11th, but to me that was the bottom of the market.
That was
copper hit $1.96, oil hit was less than $27, and I piped up and said, and it's on an interview at a day or two after that, or certainly by the end of January, I said this was bottom.
Mm.
We saw the bottom. Not always right about that, but if you would have asked me what was the oil price going to be a year later, could I have said $53? Could I have told you that copper would be $265 today? No way. I would say the copper market has bottomed. Most of the copper producers in the world are losing money at $1.96 from supply demand fundamentals. It can't stay there. Same with oil. It couldn't stay that low. But you know, we're in a paradigm now where oil is range bound between 50. Well, it's really narrowly range bound, but let's say $50 to $55. What's it going to be in a year? Well, that's a wild card. You know what the wild card is in the oil market? It's U.S. shale oil producers. Since oil bottomed in terms of U.S. production I think in October. You know how much oil, much more oil we're producing already? And what would that be, 3 months? Half a million barrels more per day in the U.S. So the shale oil guys are coming. Yeah. Rig counts last week jumped by 35.
Yeah.
We have now blown past our year past rig counts. And so we're at almost 700 rigs drilling in the U.S. now. A year ago, or even the bottom of that, we had something less than 500 rigs in the spring or summer, or even into the early fall. And you watch what's going to happen with the longer oil stays in this range. People are flocking to the Permian Basin, and all these OPEC production cuts, which is upwards of 1.8, if you add in OPEC and non-OPEC, about 1.8 to 2 million barrels a day. U.S. shale oil is going to make most of that up very quickly. So what's that going to do with this supply deficit? Or, I mean, we still got a billion barrels a day in inventory sitting around the world, almost half of that sitting in the U.S. So the oil market is not out of the woods yet, but by the same token, we use something 1% to 1.5% more oil on the planet every year, no matter what the carbon credit guys are trying to do or the climate change guys. The demand for oil continues to increase, and it will continue to increase, much like copper will, because we've got 85 million more people on planet.
Well,
that was a pretty good rant there, wasn't it?
Makes me think you're interested in oil.
I'm always interested in oil. Oil runs the world.
Yeah, that's right.
Can't tell you I'm entering into any hot oil plays or, or new energy companies. You know, for the most part, I think the most viable energy companies come out of the U.S., and I don't tend to play too much in the Canadian, market. Number one, because I don't understand it, especially, and you know, you've got pipeline problems up here, transportation problems, you've got heavy oil problems, so.
Some of the gas stuff sounds like it's a little bit nicer and easier to understand in BC.
So gas looks good, oil, commodities look good. We went through a five-year bear market for commodities. I still maintain this idea that we are in a 20 to 30 year secular bull market for commodities. We had the four to five year bear dip within that secular commodities trend. Most cycles in this business run from 4 to 7 years. The hard commodities, and hard commodities, anything that you don't basically put, wear as clothes or eat as food, you know, some soft commodities would be grain and orange juice and coffee and cotton and sow bellies and all that sort of pig bellies, whatever they call them. Basically bacon, okay? You know, when you really think about that, it's kind of amazing there's future contracts for bacon. But anyway,
well,
that's a bit
Chicago
off topic.
But no, Chicago, it's the Chicago history of Chicago, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that's right at the heart of it.
Yep.
The stockyards were a big deal then. Markets are a big deal too. I don't know much about the history there, but the social history, the anthropology, the stuff around that, just, I suspect there's
Kansas City and Chicago.
And some market lessons to be learned hidden away somewhere.
Well, so what do I do when I've got calves to go to the auction? I'm not taking my calves to the auction now. Although I got three head that need to go to the auction, but I'm not going to sell them now. I'd rather feed them and take an auction in early to mid-May when I'll get top-line price. So I'm looking at the amount it costs me to feed for the next 3 months and make an informed decision. Where do I get my numbers? I go to the Chicago Board of Trade and see what cattle are selling, you know? And And then I'll go to the local auction and see what is happening 30 miles away at the local auction held every Friday morning. And I make my decision on that.
A rancher life.
Well, it's farmer life.
Yeah.
It's a hobby farmer life. Yeah. I don't make money at it, but, you know, come to my house and we'll burn a steak and and that'll be good. It'll be good beef. So
some of the, yeah, that's the thing, right? It's a different life compared to being in the city, I think, for a lot.
Yeah. Well, so I have the best of both worlds. I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah.
Spend time in lovely downtown Vancouver, but when, you know, the weather forecast here should be what shade of gray is going to be today.
Yeah.
You know, it's just shades of gray, but yep. After a while the shades of gray kind of start wearing on me, but I go back to to sunny New Mexico and and get away from the hustle and bustle of the city and actually work on my suntan.